Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeff Sullivan can be found on Twitter at @based_ball. The senior editor at Fangraphs can be found right now, as he can Tuesdays at 10 on the Bernstein and McKnight show on The Score. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
We're all right. And looking at a Cubs team that this year has made use of the Iowa Cubs, and that shuttle has been going back and forth for the pitching staff for a position player here or there. So I'm wondering, what do we know about really good teams and the limitations of the use of their replacement level players? How many call-ups throughout a season is too many by history for really good teams?
I do think it's interesting. We're getting into a point where teams are concerned more about fatigue. Obviously, when someone gets injured, then that player needs to be replaced. But teams are also more conscious of not wearing down relievers. Players aren't playing 162 games anymore unless their name is Alcides Escobar for some reason. So I think that teams are already looking for reasons to use that AAA shuttle more often, whether it's with the bullpen or the bench. But I will say, this isn't a perfect proxy, but just looking at the list right now, the Cubs are actually, in terms of players used this season, that works pretty well, right? As a measure of how often you're moving pieces around, the Cubs have actually used the fifth fewest players of any team in baseball this year. Now the Astros are number one. They've been very healthy and very good. Astros have only used 33 players all season long, but the Cubs have only used 38, and the median here is 42. The Angels lead the way with 50 because every single player on that team has been injured. So the Cubs have actually kind of kept it together this season. And if you want to look at a recent example of a team that was using players, different players all the time, you can just look at last year's Dodgers. You know, the Astros were right where the Cubs are last year. The Astros won the World Series, and they also used the fifth fewest players in baseball. But the Dodgers last year used the sixth most. They used 52 players. During the season last year, they made liberal use of the disabled list. Some of it was for real injury. Some of it was not for real injury. But, you know, that's something that every executive is able to do. So right now, I think it's easy to notice when players are going back and forth. And obviously, there are a few important Cubs who've been banged up. But at the end of the day, right now, even with Chris Bryant out of the lineup, they're not having to dig very deep to find a replacement, whether that's David Bote or Ian Happ. And the starting rotation, even without Yu Darvish, and with a bad Tyler Chatwood, it's only really had to use six starters so far. So in a sense, the Cubs have actually been doing better than most other teams.
How much does it look to you, Jeff, that the competitiveness has something to do with that list? Because I happened to watch a lot of White Sox baseball last season, and boy, there was a whole lot of relievers used this way and that way, and competitiveness was a function there. They were happy to have some of the young kids come up like Jace Fry and throw innings out of the bullpen just because they could.
You're gonna see a lot more churn. I haven't run the numbers here. I'm gonna guess that there's a pretty decent correlation between using fewer players and being a better team. Just looking at the numbers alone, the fewer players you use means you're happier with those players. They're likely to be healthier than teams who have used a lot of guys. So the Dodgers from last year are sort of exceptional in this regard. I was looking over recent champions and recent runner-ups and runners-up, and most of them have been in the lower half in terms of players used, which I think makes pretty good sense. When you're a bad team, you just have worse players. When you have worse players, they're more likely to perform as if they were very replaceable, or you're just churning through. You want to find out if you have anything in AAA. Everyone's always looking for the next Max Muncy, right? Mm-hmm. I guess apparently now in 2018, that's just a thing we can say on the radio. But generally, more churn for worse teams. I think that's a good rule of thumb.
Cubs made a move last week in designating Chris Giménez for assignment, calling up Victor Caratini from AAA, basically saying that Caratini certainly is an offensive player, had nothing left to prove in AAA. They want his bat available. And they said it was time to give him a start a week, or whatever they said, once every 5 days or something like that. Wilson Contreras is still a young catcher, but he's still a catcher. And catching is not easy. What are the levels of games caught in a season? I mean, outside of people named Molina or other or Carlton Fisk, how many games is too many games to, when you start stressing a catcher, especially if you're looking for postseason performance?
Yeah, it's hard to think not just in terms of this current season, but also with Contreras' entire career. Obviously, catching is very, very challenging on the body, on the knees, on the hips, every part of your body that you need. Catching is bad for it, almost as bad as pitching. But and Contreras right now is on pace to catch something like almost 1,200 innings, which is quite a lot. And I was looking over the past decade or so, and a few names stand out. Obviously, there's Yadier Molina, who would catch almost every game with the Cardinals. There's Salvador Perez, who would catch almost every game with the Royals. Matt Wieters, when he was younger, he caught almost every game for the Orioles. You feel bad for Tony Cruz, backup catcher to the Stars, who pretty much never got to play because the Starters were playing every game. So these guys are pretty exceptional. And in the case of Matt Wieters, he caught almost every game back in 2012, and he was outstanding down the stretch for the Orioles. He was as good in the second half as he was in the first. He was the same age as Contreras is right now. Now, Salvador Perez, you can look at it two ways. In 2014 and 2015, he faded badly down the stretch. Well, he was playing almost every game. And 2014, he was awful in the playoffs. But 2015, he was really good in the playoffs. And, of course, the Royals went to the World Series both years. So I don't think that there are not enough recent catchers who have had the responsibilities that Contreras has right now, not enough recent cases to really get a strong sense of what the risk is here. But I would absolutely be in favor of sitting him at least a full sit, at least once a week, because otherwise I think just intuitively you can think that's going to be way too much drain, and he needs to be rested, because I think we can all be pretty confident the Cubs are going to be in the playoff picture, and we know everyone's going to be gassed. No one's really healthy in the playoffs, kind of like hockey. But you can't just play off adrenaline alone, and Contreras needs to have those reserves.
On the other side of the battery last night, we saw Kyle Hendricks get back to being what we remember Kyle Hendricks being in a year where he was just terrific a couple years ago. The mechanics were different. He's talked a lot about where he needs to be and what he needs to get to in order to make that fastball work. Was there anything specific, anything noticeably different that Cubs fans can look for perhaps in his last start before the All-Star break coming up here?
I haven't had a chance to do a mechanical breakdown yet of what Hendricks was just able to do, but I think it's encouraging. Last year it was a little strange when so many Cubs, their velocity was down. They were probably just gassed from the long playoff run the year before, but to see Hendricks' stuff playing back up, that's obviously very encouraging. To see that this year he's getting just as many swings out of the zone. He's getting just as many swings and misses, if not more. He's throwing in the zone just as often. I know we've talked before about the Contreras effect on pitch framing and how Hendricks is obviously a guy who's not trying to live over the heart of the plate, not going to blow anyone away. He needs to be around the edges, and Contreras is maybe not the perfect match for him. But I think with a case like Kyle Hendricks, you can look at him. I think he has earned the benefit of the doubt in that he can self-correct. It's not just a matter of being smart enough, but he's precise enough. I think he's a professional enough about when he goes about his business. But Hendricks is capable of figuring it out, and I think that he's not in a perfect position to succeed with the catcher that he has, but his stuff is all there. His other results are mostly in line with where they've been before, just a few too many home runs, but that's not the kind of thing that I would worry about too much.
What is the latest that we know about the overall home run environment? Because we started seeing that the numbers were dropping a little bit, not as many balls flying out as often or quite as far or as fast or, I guess, as slippery as they were. As you've always explained, looking at batted ball data across the entire league mitigates the idea of small sample size. So with every week's worth of data or month's worth of data, we know more. What's the latest?
Well, I don't know what your preferred measure is here, but an easy one is home runs per fly ball. I think that makes pretty good sense, and that's been around for a while. And it's the home runs per fly ball or home runs per batted ball, whatever you want to look at. We know that players are trying to hit a few more fly balls than they ever have before, and to a certain extent, they've been successful. There's a few more air balls this year, but the rate of home runs per fly ball in the first half last season was 13.7%. That's 13.7% of all fly balls left the yard. And right now, through basically the first half of the season, it's down at 12.6%.
And I think we, point, huh?
Yeah, a full percentage point, which is meaningful. I mean, we're looking at a drop of, what is that, essentially 7-8% off the rate. I know it's weird to go between percent and percentage points, but whatever. People know what I mean. And I know we talked about this, I think, roughly a month ago about it was a little early in the season, but the home run rate definitely looked down. And I think that this is pretty compelling, not conclusive, but pretty compelling evidence that something has changed again with the ball. I don't think this is a conspiracy. I don't think it's necessarily intentional, but I do think that when that commission studied the ball over the offseason, trying to figure out what happened, and they found that for one reason or another, the baseball was experiencing less drag in the air. Maybe it was something on the surface of the ball, but it definitely looks like there's a little bit of drag that has returned to the ball. And no one really loves a scientific mystery, I guess, when you're just listening to it on the radio. But the baseball, I would say, is flying a little bit less far than it did last year, which is an unusual coincidence.
I guess when you put it all together, it might not be that unusual, but I think probably still worth bringing up. Jeff, we're at that point in July where trade talk is still somewhat grounded in reality. We haven't all become unmoored to what's actually going on. So at the risk of loosing us from the dock here, the Nationals have won 2 and lost 2 since their historic comeback and team meeting the other day. And we are now beginning to have a lot of folk talk and write about the idea of the Washington Nationals trading impending free agent Bryce Harper. Is there an argument to this? Is there an argument to them making a move with one of baseball's youngest stars who has struggled some and could re-sign with Washington after the season anyway?
I think there could be. I think that the Nationals don't need to lose more games of ground, but if the Nationals lost more games of ground, such as they drifted further from the race between now and the deadline, there would absolutely be an argument, because at that point, Harper's not going to re-sign with the Nationals, and they would have no reason to keep him. But at this point, with the Nationals still being just 5.5 back of teams who I do still think are somewhat vulnerable, and in the Phillies and Braves, to say nothing of the wild card hunt, the Nationals are starting to get healthy. Daniel Murphy is back, and Adam Eaton is back, and Steven Strasburg will be back before too long. I look at the Nationals, I think that where they are right now, they're still easily within striking distance, and it would be an unsellable move to trade Bryce Harper. But, you know, if they had another stretch where they went 5-15 or whatever it was they did over the past several weeks, and they lost another like 8 games of ground in the standings, well, then of course, then you make a move. But right now, to trade a superstar is already so difficult for any team, even a team like the Orioles, where you see they're having trouble trading Manny Machado. It's a tough pill to swallow, but if you were anywhere near the hunt and you give up, I mean, there's telling your fans you're going into a rebuild, and then there's trading one of the most visibly compelling baseball players on the planet, and I don't think the Nationals right now are close to a position where they would do that.
All right, before we let you go, what is the right thing for the Cubs to do about Tyler Chatwood?
Yeah.
They can't keep doing this, whatever they're doing. It's not fair to everybody else.
Yeah, I think not only with the Darvish news, I don't know what the future is going to hold for you, Darvish, this season, but with Chatwood being what he is, obviously the stuff is good, right? We've all seen he still throws hard, the ball still moves. Chatwood has an interesting repertoire, and it doesn't mean you have to pull the plug on him as a starter for the remainder of his contract, but I think what the Cubs need more than anything else right now is you trade for a starting pitcher. It's weird to think about the Cubs needing a starting pitcher given with just the name value in their rotation and everything they've spent on it. But I think what you do is you trade for a starter. Maybe that's Jay Happ. Maybe you aim higher. Maybe you go get Nathan Eovaldi, who I really like right now with the Rays. But then you can move Chatwood into the bullpen, kind of give him a soft start, but maybe tell him that we were going to want to try you in multi-inning stints to see if your stuff plays up. And maybe you can narrow down your repertoire and just see if Chatwood can turn into a really interesting reliever, not unlike Wade Davis, not to say that his ceiling would be that high. But you tell him, look, this is something we want to do in the second half. We're in the race. I mean, look at your own numbers. I think you would understand. We'll give you a shot to start next spring if that's what you want, but we want to try in the bullpen. And I think this whole time, ever since they signed Chatwood to that contract, there was a pretty good chance he was going to end up as a reliever. I think there were enough red flags around him as a starter. So given where they are in the standings right now, given how vulnerable they are, I would not hesitate to move Chatwood into the bullpen for now.
Yeah, when you say he'd be an interesting reliever, that's sort of interesting in the Chinese proverb sense. I like my relievers uninteresting, if that's how you're describing him. I don't know. I don't know that you could do that and just bring him in and cross your fingers in the middle of a game and hope that he can throw the ball over the plate.
I mean, I would not put Chatwood immediately in a high leverage role. And the Cubs are blessed. I mean, you've got Morrow, you've got Edwards, you've got Cishek, you got other guys you can throw out there at the end of the game. You give Chatwood, you know, a few weeks lower leverage appearances, just kind of let him get a feel for it. But again, not to go right back to the best possible case, but you look at Wade Davis's numbers as a starter and then as a reliever, and he was jerked back and forth a few years in a row, but just a dreadful starting pitcher. You'd look at him and you would never think, well, this guy could become one of the best closers in baseball immediately. And he took to it overnight. So the shift from starting to relieving can, I don't know whether it's a psychological thing or a physical thing, but it can make a far bigger difference than you'd think that it could for someone who just can't throw strikes.
Oh. Jeff, appreciate it as always, man.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you next week.
That is Jeff Sullivan of FanGraphs, brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for all your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies.
I'm trying to think back to Wade Davis's starts. And he's right. It wasn't as wild. It wasn't as crazy as other places. But the idea that you could just move Wade Davis into the bullpen was kind of no one had expected that kind of top end. I mean, really, nobody was looking at it from that perspective. That trade was for Wade Davis to be a back end of the rotation type guy. And when he was put into the bullpen, Royals fans and those who wrote about the team themselves were like, "Well, this trade was just not worth it. You're just not getting enough out of that player, out of Will Myers."
That's a pretty high outlier of a comp, though. I'm not even ready to.
He's right in that relief work can make a lot of stuff play up, but when control is that big an issue. It's a historic level of issue for him. You know what? 8.9 walks per nine?
I'm not there yet.
It's a gigantic level.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. We are your Score Midday Show, 9 to 1, Monday through Friday. When we come back, I have to confess, something I did not know, or something I guess I did not appreciate about Javier Baez.
Oh, I thought you'd watched Very Cavallari last night and wanted to make your amends.
You are in charge of that.
Yeah, it's...
Someone's going to have to explain that to me at some point about what the allure is.
I went home, yes. I mistransitioned yesterday.
Any of it.
I wasn't feeling that great, so I'm sitting there at the house just kind of like trying to reconstitute myself and getting there slowly. And I thought of the words like that you said that was my job. Like you had tasked me with Very Cavallari.
You're in charge.
I really started to rethink some things. That could be a much tougher task than I thought it would be yesterday.
Okay, something is just not connecting why anybody would be interested in watching any of it.
Okay. Well, you could watch it once and try.
It is a novel concept. I would never get that time back in my life. I would never. We've got to find
out. Have you ever listened to any show you've done?
It's gone.
Finite amount of time on this planet, and it would just be gone. And I just... There's no interest in being a part of the lives of any of those people. It's just not – there's not a single aspect of it.
I enjoyed Jay thoroughly while watching the show. I did have to lie to myself many times while watching it and while Jay wasn't on television telling myself I was enjoying this hour.
The thing is, some of it is his face. Like seeing it is the facial expression to go along with the snarky quotes. The facial expressions are fantastic.
Okay, but we know he's boring and unintelligent.
Right.
And
it's something about the joy that he finds in being completely ambivalent that's just amazing.
I know what it is. You don't enjoy people. Is that part of the problem?
But he's not.
He doesn't either. Jay doesn't either. Jay hates
that's
people.
Part of what makes him great, though.
I guess I don't understand that. I don't get it. And I have something that you did not know, perhaps, about Javier Baez.
Okay.
Next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Have fun. Boy, I'm sure sorry I missed that.
I will find my joy in the moments of Jay and very, you know, and then it will probably go away pretty quickly.
Strangest phenomena.
I don't think it's that strange.
Perspective. Like, What's entertaining about that?
It's honestly, I think what might be entertaining about it is watching that whole reality show go around. If you ever watched, honest question, I don't mean it, if you sat down and watched an episode of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, something like that.
I've never watched either one of those.
Okay. Sometimes what happens when you sit down and watch that with a group of friends is you point out the person in the room that is most likely to be funny on the show because they're calling out all of the nonsense that's clearly happening. The fun part about watching those trashy, awful shows is because you can very clearly point out the things that aren't real, and you feel better about yourself.
Well, none of it's real.
Of course not. None of it's real. But you feel better about yourself for pointing that out. Like, oh, aren't I smart? I've pointed. That's the dirty secret of reality television, the way that's shaped.
Jay is us. Jay is us in that situation.
He gets to be like the ombudsman of the show, right? I saw this written up somewhere. I think it might have been The Athletic, that he gets to be the guy who's like, this is all nonsense, and y'all are crazy, and it's just a nightmare of a time right now.
By nature of his own natural insouciance,
yes,
he embodies the way a critical viewer feels about the entire enterprise.
More or less. Yeah.
Yes, us. Like, this is absurd. This is complete absurdity.
He is finally the voice on a reality television that's waving in front of the camera saying, this is all nonsense and these people are all ridiculous.
I'm trying to think. So classically, almost like a Greek chorus,
yeah,
in Greek drama.
Almost like
commenting,
that.
Sort of bridging the players to the audience, commenting on it as it goes.
And all the while,
the fun is seeping out of Jay Cutler now.
All the while being the Jay Cutler that you always saw up there on the podium.
So the ultimate use of the natural Cutlerness,
uh-huh,
is to have him as an antidote to the obvious phony stupidity of his own wife's television life.
It works. It almost gets him interested in the show for an hour.
I guess you've done a decent job. Maybe, or like,
and he hates her friends, which is we've all experienced.
Yes,
right.
It's
and he's not shy about making it clear that he's not pretending to like her friends.
No hi from you. More about buys.
Okay. All right. I guess I'm willing to try to understand the socio-psychology
willing to watch
of this show. Not quite yet. Or maybe,
what if we made you...
I think you'll be in on the episode when you guys have clips about being an anti-vaxxer.
Ooh.
That would excite you, I think.
Are there episodes about that?
I don't know.
Because can't you scroll through? I saw somebody doing this or taking pictures of it, that you could scroll through future episodes and get the descriptions of the episode.
Yeah,
the Cutlers take the kids to the doctor.
But that's not funny. I mean, not vaccinating your kids. I don't find entertaining or funny or any way. I don't care. I don't care if my kids get measles. I don't care if herd immunity. I mean, I wouldn't find that funny.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So here's what I did not know about Javier Baez.
All right.
Apparently regarded across the board as an absolute smoke show.
Yes. Attractive man.
All right. I mean,
buddy's wife who will only watch Cubs games if Javi Baez is starting, which has been a lot recently, so it's been easy to get her to watch games.
And apparently in climbing the ranks of Cher, Judy Garland, Lady Gaga, and others, as apparently extremely well-regarded in the gay community also.
No kidding.
I did not know this. Our buddy Chris Hine, who used to write for the Tribune, who...
Fantastic writer.
Fabulous writer.
Fantastic writer.
Who now is with the Minneapolis Star Tribune. He was tweeting about it and just talking about what the Baez effect has been. And again, this is anecdotal, but I take it from him. He says, I still get messages from my gay friends in Chicago about Javi. He's single-handedly converting them into baseball fans. And somebody replied to Chris Hine, and he says, the background on my wife's phone has been his body issue picture ever since she found it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he did the body issue.
And then Chris responded, my friends were on him before the body issue. They became lifelong...
They're Baez hipsters.
Yeah, they were totally ahead of the curve on that. And they became lifelong converts after it came out. So across the spectrum, men, women, countrymen, everybody is attracted to Javier Baez.
Rough night for Baez last night. I'm sure everyone was cued in to his falling asleep there in foul territory. He still remains devastatingly handsome and a damn good second baseman.
Yeah, I just this was something I really wasn't aware of. I mean, to me, he's devastatingly interesting and fun to watch as a baseball player. Hmm. And he also, because he wears the face guard.
Oh yeah, the flap. Sure.
When he's on the bases, you know, you don't get to see the full sexy Flanders going out there.
Full sexy Flanders.
Stupid sexy Flanders. I didn't know. I guess this is a thing.
I believe Andrew McCutchen had a similar following while he was making his
really?
MD. I believe that's right. I'm trying to think back to friends who were in Pittsburgh at the time and others who were watching it, because the Pirates had grab some national games. I think they were on like a national game right before the All-Star break that season when McCutchen won his MVP. So yeah, that was there's a little bit of traction there as well.
Yeah, I guess we can get all sorts of votes on this, yay or nay. But we need to ask our colleague Mary Dixon at WXRT. She is a Cub observer, and lately, if you've been following her on Twitter, whatever's going on across from the WXRT studios,
she's got a window apparently.
She's got a special morning friend apparently. That there is a young man in an apartment mm-hmm. visible from here who makes a daily display of his goings to and from the shower and picking out clothing.
Really?
And she's been doing play-by-play.
That is a confident morning.
Yeah, she's been doing Twitter play-by-play about this each day, and everybody's kind of been enjoying watching this happen. That's been my reality television lately, is sort of following her, examining her exhibitionist neighbor.
So vicariously through someone who's living vicariously through a window.
Yeah, they're talking about a comment on modern times,
right? A number of different removals from the situation in order to enjoy, I guess, the reality part of it.
Yeah,
there, live with that.
There are several people who are also backing you up in your description of what the attraction is of the Jay Cutler role on this show. Others are warning me, do stay strong and do not watch this.
It's rough. I mean, some of the interstitials, the stuff in between Jay Cutler appearances on that show is tough. Maybe we'll just make you a super cut. You know, just a bunch of Jay stuff after four or five episodes. That'll be a little bit more palatable.
I don't know, but if
a little bit more palatable.
I bet the people that are saying stay away, don't even give it a shot, didn't watch it themselves.
Really? You're that confident in this being good?
I'm not saying good. No, I'm just saying good. The Jay part being entertaining. Okay. Everything else you can keep.
Entertaining and good are two different things.
I think you're right. I think we should know that of all shows. I think there's no question that we're
it's on our billboard.
We resemble that remark. We are going to be doing the Midday Midway at 11. I want to get back to something that was mentioned yesterday and something I realized that I was watching bad reality television. And when something can be too good for its own good and it makes something else look worse in hindsight, I'll believe you. I'll pay that off. I'll tell you what I mean by it. But right now, in a moment, we are going to give away a possibility for, not a possibility, an actuality for you and a guest to have a meet and greet with Joe Maddon.
Oh, awesome. The 24th.
Yeah, we're going to give that away next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Joe's going to join us today in, a little over an hour?
Yeah, at noon, Joe's going to hang out with us for a little bit. Good time to talk with Joe. Some lapses defensively last night, but a really stellar night from Kyle Hendricks, and when they needed him to have it, too. Been looking for one for a while at Kyle.
This segment brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. You have enough things to worry about every day. Insurance shouldn't be one of them. You can leave worry behind when Liberty stands with you. Liberty Mutual Insurance. So I'm going to be out Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And the reason is, this is the first year that both of our children have gone to overnight camp for 8 weeks. My daughter is in the Minnesota Pine Forest, about 3.5-4 hours
up
north.
Up Bemidji Way?
Yes, up Bemidji Way. And my son's at a camp in Hayward. So my wife and I are doing something we have never done, and that is an extended road trip. We have traveled together. We have taken car rides together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think really the most time we've spent in the car together was, were we just married when we were maybe engaged when we did a Buffalo to Toronto drive, which was, I don't know, a couple hours, whatever it was. We went to visit my grandmother in Buffalo and decided to rent a car. We just, back before kids, you can do these things.
That's
and,
it?
And we just did a couple nights in Toronto. We have not really had a lot of car time together.
You're kidding me.
No, Galena was Galena. Three. That was probably
3 hours.
Long as it was.
We used to, I mean, the McKnight family got chucked into a station wagon and drove all the way to Myrtle Beach for every summer. I mean, 14, wow. 15 hours.
Look, and
we did a Maine trip once that was 20 something. Yeah. It was just kids, shut up, don't do anything.
Our family has not done a lot of that. We've done a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
But it's just, and she is absolutely, she's been dreading this. Because
it's a lot of time in a car with you.
That's exactly what it is, and it's a total of what it was. It's like 1,267 miles. Tomorrow morning, it's going to be drived straight to Bemidji.
You're going straight to Bemidji.
Yep.
Through cable. Are you going to get to Minnesota side first?
No. Cable is on the way back.
That's right.
That's near Hayward.
That's right.
But there is a cable, Minnesota, that we're going to be driving through off of 94.
So you're headed to Eau Claire, essentially.
Pretty much. It's like Black River Falls, Eau Claire,
and hooking up 94 Duluth, and then over. Bemidji. Yeah, okay.
Actually, 694 around Minneapolis, and then straight up.
Okay.
But we're going to, it's two nights, then it's across back to Hayward, and then home from Hayward Sunday. So what she is deciding to do is the 708 says Bernstein's wife's going to file for divorce by Friday. Now, all you have to do is, first of all, she's on Twitter at SQN events. I am at Dan_Bernstein. And this we're making a thing out of it. The hashtag is driving me nuts.
Yar.
That is the hashtag. And what she's decided to do is, in an effort to make some good out of her ordeal, she's asking people in her honor, or with her safety and health and well-being in mind, to pledge money for the umbrella charity that works with my daughter's camp, my son's camp, and other camps as well, to help give kids from underprivileged backgrounds the opportunity to have a camping experience. And it's a really cool thing. There's some underserved communities, there's communities that aren't even aware of the possibilities of camping. And the camps involved, the girls' camps, Birch Trail, Comegys, and Chippewa Ranch Camp. It's where my sister went. And we welcome Camp Menominee to this group for Camp for All Kids, along with Timberlane and North Star. These are all sort of cross-pollinated groups of camps that have sprung up from the same family tree, and they all work together to help send kids to camp. And it's just camp. It's just camp. It's just running around in the woods and chasing frogs and shooting a bow and arrow and fishing and water skiing and all that kind of stuff. So if you just follow the hashtag driving me nuts, or you can follow either one of us on Twitter, you can throw a couple of dollars this way for her ordeal.
Will you be filing reports from the road?
Yes, I think she will be too. I think she's going to have, I don't know when the camera's going to be on, but there she's going to do our own little reality TV thing where there's going to be, I don't know what videos there are going to be or how she's going to do this. And we were taking suggestions for music, because she wants to do podcasts, and I told her I am a podcast. You got me here for free.
That's what she wants to listen to.
Right.
So just put the quarter in Dan for 4 or 5 hours.
She said some people listen to Dan for 5 or 4 hours a day. I don't understand these people.
Choose that.
They actually choose to do that, but. And I'm looking for some music, and I've already had some recommendations on really good albums for the road. Maybe
you
things
want
I
new
haven't
stuff,
heard.
Or you want stuff
I don't
that
know.
You've.
Mark Caro has suggested this, "The Good Earth" by the Feelies.
Heard of it? Haven't gone.
I've downloaded
it.
That. I have to go back to my roots. My go-to driving to and from college, always to start, was REM's "Reckoning." Just a great driving album, great road album.
Alternatively, you just Canned Heat on repeat over and over again for 5 or 6 hours. It's the way road trips always start in movies too, right? You ever notice that? They get into the car, close the door, they start taking off, and Canned Heat starts playing on the way up.
Either that or Jackson Browne's "Running on Empty."
Oh, yeah. No, right? But that was this very specific, like, 8 or 9 years of film where that was. The rest of it was all Canned Heat.
It has to be Canned Heat or Allman Brothers or Running on Empty.
Yep.
If we're actually doing
the choices of cross-country road
Forrest
trips.
Gump's
very,
running through the mountains.
Yeah.
That's it, right?
That's Running on Empty.
It's Running on Empty.
I can't do that. No.
For 4 or 5 hours? No.
But she doesn't understand. I sing along with stuff. I sing wrong bad harmonies loudly.
It's the best way to stay awake during a drive. Are you driving or is she going to do the driving? Do you have a delineation on who does when?
I'm driving.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
More comfortable that way.
Yeah, otherwise I'd be like, go get around that guy.
I will never understand people who want to be a passenger in the car. I don't get it.
Yeah.
First of all, why would you leave your life in someone else's hands when it can be in your hands
the entire
way? And the
other person is not going fast enough.
Never. Absolutely never. And on those two-lane highways in Wisconsin where everybody just drives 55 in the left-hand lane, I mean, all the locals, everybody from around there, like Rice Lake and all that stuff, they're just 55 in the left-hand lane, and that's fine because they're getting from place to place. But really, the left lane is for passing and passing only, and it's dangerous to drive slowly in the left-hand lane.
I've had to reconcile that myself because I drive 2 to 2.5 hours a day to and from here.
Really?
Yeah. So when it gets to the weekend, my wife is like, so I assume I'm driving, and it doesn't matter where we're going. I'm like, oh, yeah. So I've had to, like, learn to turn that part of my brain off.
Oh, it's
because she's the person that at the four-way stop, if she's pretty sure it's her turn but isn't 100% sure, she'll wave somebody else on, and I tell her, you're gonna cause an accident,
right? But say you go.
Yeah, but her logic is, well, it hasn't happened yet.
And the 815 says, can Mrs. Bernstein live tweet the car trip? Can she call the segment Very Bernstein? Now she's going to be posting. I don't know when the camera's going to be on or what she's going to be sending or what she's going to be recording. But
can we get an exclusive on this? Can we play some of the audio on the show?
She is going on her own volition. This is not a kidnapping. She is willing to do this, but she's also never really been to the North Woods, ever.
What do you mean?
Jersey girl. She's really? She's never seen stars. I swear to you, she's never gone camping of any kind.
Oh, that's a whole,
I was trying to explain, and she went up to Banff recently.
Yeah.
That was her first time ever in the North Woods Dawn, but that's the mountains. Mm-hmm. And she didn't get to see stars because it was the summer solstice and the sun didn't go down till 11. So she wasn't able to stay up late enough to actually see stars up that far north.
You're
gonna
see
that time of year.
You're going to see them up there.
And I tried to explain. I said, look, up there, you can actually see the Milky Way galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
You can see satellites. You can see all. I mean, it's. And she's like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean? Like, you have no idea. She's like, oh, you mean like the Big Dipper? I'm like, no. I mean, like, all of them.
Everything.
All the stars.
It's crowded up
every
there.
Every bit
it
of
gets
them.
To such a degree, you're just insane.
Yeah. So wish her luck. And if you want to throw a couple dollars to Camp for All Kids and help out some underprivileged kids and some underserved communities get an opportunity to enjoy the camping experience. And for those of us who have enjoyed the camping experience, for whom it's been a multi-generational thing and lifelong friendships and lessons you learn about life and ways to help turn young boys into men and to help young ladies turn into grown women. Sometimes you send kids away. They got to get away from their parents. They got to get away from home. They got to go into the woods, and you tend to emerge better people for it.
I think that's what Thoreau was all writing about, right? That's the entire premise of it.
Yeah, well, Thoreau was a little different.
Heading off into the woods, thinking about self.
Not really, because the transcendentalists, it's funny because when you talk about Thoreau and Emerson, specifically Thoreau, it was about the juxtaposition of wilderness with civilization. The important thing about Walden Pond is not how far it was from – it's the fact that it was right there. Mm-hmm. His whole point, and that's what happened with – if you ever read Lincoln at Gettysburg, it talks about some of this, about cemeteries, about what the American cemetery was during the transcendentalist ideal of having spaces like this near larger civilization, near cities where you had that kind of refuge. So it's not quite like that. I'm talking about actually being away, actually getting in the car and driving away, not having that sort of set-aside parkland near you. Sorry to quibble on your transit.
No, quibble away. Okay. I exist for quibble. I live for quibble. And speaking of quibble,
it's on radio, it's quibbles and bits.
Speaking of, there is a much larger bit. I know we got the midday coming up in just a couple of minutes, but there's a bit of breaking news from the NFL Players Association that we've got to get to as well. Everyone saw this coming except those who enacted the thing. It is just, oh man, more of that coming up. It's the Bernstein and McKnight show. You all right over here?
The 630 says you realize by the end of the trip, she's going to be helping the banjo-playing yokel stuff you into a wood chipper. Yeah, well, that's why I'm driving, because she can't do it then, because then it risks all of us. Okay, we've got a lot more to come in the Midday Midway. And
we do.
I'll tell you what I'm saying about a little other reality TV thing that I think went a little bit too well. You've got the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.